Try that again. Good afternoon, everyone. Welcome. The time being 5:30 p.m. I will open the meeting. My name is Paula Eat. I'm the Mayor of Kingborough, and it's my pleasure to welcome everyone back to the Chambers tonight for our first in-person meeting since January, I think. Welcome to those who are in the public gallery tonight. It's lovely to see that we're able to accommodate members of our community being back here, but also a warm good evening to those who are watching along at home, because we still do stream this via YouTube. Being now just after 5:30 p.m, I will declare the meeting for Monday the 21st of March 2022 open. I wish to advise that council meetings are recorded and made publicly available on our website, and in accordance with council's policy, I would ask the general manager to confirm that the recording has started.
Confirmed.
Thank you. I'd like to begin by acknowledging the traditional custodians of the land and pay respects to elders past and present, and also today's Tasmanian Aboriginal community. The attendees this evening are myself, Councillor Reed, Deputy Mayor Councillor Westwood, Councillor Bastone, Councillor Cordova, Councillor Fox, Councillor Gladewright, Councillor Midgley, Councillor Street and Councillor Wass. From the staff this evening, we have the General Manager, Mr Arnold, Chief Financial Officer, Mr Breen, Director of Engineering Services, Mr Reeve, Director of Governance, Recreation and Property Services, Mr Smee, the Director of Environment, Development and Community Services, Dr Stevenson, the Manager of Development Services, Ms Tyler Moore, our Media and Communications Advisor, Ms Adams, and we've got our Transform Kingston Officer, Mr Kamet Soglu. We have apologies this evening from Councillor Grace. Staying now on page one, confirmation of minutes, the motion is that the minutes of the open session of Council Meeting Number 4, held on the 7th of March 2022, be confirmed as a true record. I'm looking for a mover and a seconder. Thank you, Councillor Fox. Seconded, Councillor Gladewright. All those in favour? Against? The motion is carried unanimously. Workshops held since the last Council meeting. We had a workshop last Tuesday, the 15th of March, in relation to the tree bylaw. Moving now to page two and declarations of interest. Does any councillor have a declaration of interest that they would like to share? No? Thank you. Transfer of agenda items. Is there any item on the agenda that a councillor would like to transfer from closed into open session or open into closed session? No? Thank you. Also on page two, questions on notice from the public. There was a question on notice in relation to the Spring Farm walking track from Mr David Bain, and an officer's response from Mr Smee. Questions without... I've missed an item. Sorry, I beg your pardon. I've missed questions without notice from the public. I skipped ahead, which is terribly rude considering we have now three members of the public here. Does any member of the community here wish to ask a question without notice? My apologies for avoiding that. I wasn't avoiding it, for missing it. I wasn't avoiding it. Feel free to ask anything. My apologies. Thank you very much. There are no questions without notice from the public today. Questions without notice from councillors. Does any councillor have a question without notice? Definitely not avoiding those either. Councillor Gladewright.
Thank you. I'd just like to know, please, if council have the same role in the state current state elections and the federal elections as we do with the council elections in terms of signage and compliance and those sorts of things.
Yes, we do.
Great. Yeah. Thank you. So it's just all exactly the same?
Yes.
All of it.
Okay. Yes.
Great. I'll have a look at those.
Thank you. Thank you. Councillor Fox.
I have one in committee. Thank you.
In closed session?
Yes. Yep. Sorry.
Thank you. Councillor Bastone, then Councillor Cordova, then Councillor Westwood.
Thank you, Mayor. In the last state elections, I think $100,000 was committed by the state government for a footpath from the Woodbridge Hall to the post office. This was to link up with the current footpath, which goes from the post office to the Woodbridge School. Now, Paul Donnelly, before he left, came down with other people from the council to scope it out. I'm wondering what the status of the footpath is at the moment.
Mr Reeve, are you able to assist us with that?
Through you, Mayor. Yes, at the moment there, we're just in the process of actually doing the design, actually getting the survey and then the design, and then there'll be some future further consultation with the community down there once we've actually got to a conceptual design for that particular project.
Thank you.
Councillor Cordova and then Councillor Westwood.
Thank you, Mayor. My question is about e-scooters, in particular the e-scooter trials in Launceston and in Hobart. My question is really, how will our council be undertaking assessment of the success or otherwise of those programs, and with a view of potentially implementing similar trials here in Kingborough? What's the kind of mechanism, or in what way will we be undertaking our assessment of the success or otherwise of those trials? Thanks.
Mr. Reeve.
Through Mayor, I know that they're currently running some forums based on the trials that are actually happening in Hobart there, so we believe we'll get some information from that. So I know there'll be a couple of council officers actually attending those forums there, where they'll be clearly going through some of the stats so far. As to whether they will then share as to whether there'll be an extension of that out to some of the other satellite areas around Hobart, I'm not sure, but we'll know more once we've been to the forum.
Thank you. Councillor Westwood.
Thank you, Mayor. My questions relate to the release of, or the issue of titles at Spring Farm Estate. I have some questions for now, and then I have a couple of questions for closed session. I have a number of questions. I guess to start with, the final plan for Spring Farm Estate, Section 11, has Council approved that final plan and issued titles yet? Or issued, or made a recommendation to the Recorder of Titles to issue those titles?
Ms. Tullamore.
Through you, Mayor, the documentation hasn't got to the Titles Office yet because not all matters have been resolved, so Council's working with the developer to finalise those. There's been correspondence as late as today about works that they still haven't completed, and they're requesting to bond some of those works. We need to consider that request and consider other final documents that are due to come to us, such as the Part 5 agreement.
Thank you. And has Council received any complaints from the developer throughout the stages of trying to finalise the process of getting the title issued?
Ms. Tullamore.
Through you, Mayor. No, we've not received any complaints regarding Stage 11.
Thank you. When are the titles expected to be issued for Stage 11?
Ms. Tullamore.
Through you, Mayor, that partly is up to the developer because they need to provide additional information to Council so that it can be resolved and deal with the bond matter. However, talking to them, it seems like they're keen to try and get it done soon. They're having an issue with some of their contract, or not an issue with their contractors are busy, so that's delaying them. But we would estimate that maybe it might be in the next 2 or 3 weeks that they'll get that all done, and then it'll go to the Titles Office, and it's up to them how long it takes.
And how long does it normally take in the Lands Titles Office?
It does actually vary a fair bit from a couple of weeks to quite a number of weeks. I presume it has to do with how busy they are at the Titles Office and how complicated the titles and other appendages are.
I've had representations from numerous residents who've bought blocks of land at Spring Farm Estate that the significant delays in the issue of the title are impacting on the cost of the build that they will need to, meet. So, for example, someone who bought a lot in January 2021, who's still waiting for that title to be released, is facing significant, up to hundreds of thousands of dollars, increase in building costs because of the increase in supply, largely due to COVID. Is there a complication with the Part 5 agreement that is holding up the process in negotiations between Council and the developer?
Ms. Tullamore.
Through you, Mayor. There's two different components to your question. So the first was about that they purchased the title, they purchased the lot in 2021. This is an ongoing issue with developers that sell titles before or sell land before they have titles. So sometimes they will go out to market to try and move them and sell them, and the purchasers believe that it's imminent, that the title's about to go. Now, there's a big risk in that. There's a risk on the purchasers on that. As an example, there may be changes to the plans during the process, so it might turn out that they have to put an additional easement on the properties affecting the lands, or they might have to change the boundary. So it's actually with quite a bit of risk that you buy it before the titles are released. We have no control over how properties are sold. It's not something to us, but we do heed warning to purchasers about that. So it's then up to the developer how long as well that they take to do the works. So it's not a matter of being held up as if it's a clerical hold-up. They actually need to deliver the works and all those assets that get handed over to council, so all the drains and the roads and the footpaths. There's a whole raft of work that they need to do. The matter about the increased building costs, obviously council has no influence over that. And it is unfortunate, but there's nothing that can be done by council, and it's not being unduly held up. It's just simply part of the process, and it's very difficult for a very large subdivision such as this one.
And the Part 5 agreement?
The Part 5 agreement has gone back and forth between council and the developer. However, a lot of that information has been given to the developer along the way. It's to do with the fence. There was discussions about the fence. They wanted to keep the existing boundary fence, but that doesn't line up with the new boundaries, and they're required under these areas to have certain setbacks for their bushfire requirements under the Building Act. And the way that they had it would mean that you had these sort of weird little pieces of land on the other side of their fence that they would then need to be required to maintain as part of their bushfire requirements, but actually wouldn't have access to it, and then they would be entering the land that we're trying to protect them from falling off the cliff and the like. So the Part 5 agreement had to do with that, but mostly it's resolved, and I believe last week some final conversations were had, and we're just waiting for that to come back in, so we don't think that there's going to be any further issues with that Part 5 agreement.
And has the developer given any reason to indicate that it's struggling to meet the requests of council in order to complete its requirements so that the titles can be issued?
Through you, Mayor, it's not a matter of them struggling to meet the requirements, and the requirements are nothing more than is required for the subdivision to meet the handover of those assets and the other requirements associated with the development. So, no, they haven't indicated that. It's probably a matter of being busy delivering a very big subdivision, other works. It's not surprising that it has taken time. They haven't noted anything of significance. But as I mentioned earlier, they do have a delay to finalise some of those final parts because the contractors are busy.
Thank you. So I guess to the best of your ability, council is working with the developer to get those titles issued as quickly as possible. Would that be accurate?
Yeah, through you, Mayor. Absolutely. We are working with the developer to finalise those matters and get it all completed. It's particularly important at this final stage. This is the last stage of Spring Farm because you can't go back. And as we know, there's lots of assets that will be transferred to council, and we certainly don't want to be encumbered with substandard work or work that then has to be picked up by a councillor at the cost of the ratepayers.
Thank you very much.
Thank you, Councillor Westwood. Councillor Midgley.
Thank you, Mayor. I'm just following up on a letter that we sent to State Growth regarding the Channel Highway Corridor Study, asking them for the actions that were to be completed, or I guess their goal they wanted to do in regards to that. And one in particular, and I note that there is one of the actions has been started, which is the feasibility study for the off-road shared path, but there were quite a number of other ones. And one in particular, lowering of the speed limit on the Channel Highway from 90 kilometres to 80 kilometres there in front of Howden Road. And I'm wondering at all if staff have received any feedback in regards to update on the actions of this.
We did receive a response, and I thought I had circulated it to councillors, so I apologise if I haven't. Not sure, Mr. Reeve, whether that rings any bells. if I'll take that on notice and I'll find it and circulate it around. Any further questions without notice? No? Thank you. Move then to questions on notice from councillors. The first was from Councillor Bastone in relation to speed limit signage and an officer's response from Mr Smee. The second one, also from Councillor Bastone, was in relation to a missing sign at Woodbridge and a response from Mr Smee. Still on page 3, there are no petitions that are still being actioned. But then petitions received in the last period. There was a petition in relation to the upgrade of the car park at the Truna Bowls and Community Club with a recommendation on the same page. And I'm looking for a mover and a seconder, please. Moved in Councillor Fox, seconded Councillor Westwood. Did you want to speak on that? No? I'll put the motion. All those in favour? Against? Motion is carried. Turning now to page 4, Officers' Report to Council. We're now sitting as a... Oh, no, we're not sitting as a planning authority. Sorry, beg your pardon, we're not. We're sitting as council, not the planning authority for this one. It is STR 15 of 2021, application to strata title 50 Hayes Road, Adventure Bay, Bruny Island, with a recommendation on page 12. I'm looking for a mover and a seconder, please. Moved Councillor Fox, seconded Councillor Cordova. Councillor Fox.
Thank you, Mayor. This is a it is clearly a difficult situation, but we have had legal advice, which I think under the circumstances we should abide by, and we're obliged to do so. It's supporting the staff's recommendation that we do refuse this request, and I think it's there are a number of concerns that have been raised in terms of this development, but it's basically considering that it looks as though they're trying to get a subdivision in an area where subdivision is not allowed, and the reasons outlined in the report explain why this is inappropriate. So that's why I move the motion. Thank you.
Thank you, Councillor Fox. Councillor Cordova.
Thank you, Mayor. I just wanted to start by asking a question about item 6.6. This is on page 10, and it's referring to the two buildings, Lodge and the Studio. It says in the report that they both should have been classed as 1B buildings, that is, accommodation buildings rather than 1A buildings being regular dwellings. My question is really, how did that come to pass that they were classed incorrectly in the first place?
Ms. Tullamore.
Through you, Mayor, the documentation's put in by the private building surveyor, and that's what they noted on their plans. Why it wasn't picked up at council, I'm not too sure. It was some time ago, and it wouldn't seem out of place. It wouldn't ring alarm bells to see a 10A, because normally you'd just have dwellings, but because it is visitor accommodation, it does change the class type.
Thank you. And through you, Mayor, yeah, so my understanding is because there's a different risk profile for Class 1B as opposed to Class 1A, for example, in Class 1A buildings, every building needs a smoke alarm in it, but for accommodation, you would need more smoke alarms or you'd need illuminated signage to help with evacuation and things like that. So I guess overall, I'll just start, rather than bury the lead, I'll just say that I plan to, as is indicated by seconding this motion, I plan to vote in line with the Council's recommendations to refuse to issue a certificate of approval in relation to the application under Section 31(2)(a) of the Strata Titles Act of 1998. My reason for that is that it appeared clear to me in the report that this proposal is basically on paper. Whilst it's an application for a strata, it really is a subdivision. And it says on page 9 that under 6.3 that the minimum lot size for the zone is 5 hectares, and this site is only 1.4 hectares currently, so subdivision of the site is prohibited. So it does seem to me to be fairly cut and dry. I did have a follow-up question, though, about the enforcement investigation Comp 72/2021 was undertaken regarding works that have already occurred at the site without the required planning or building approval. So my question was regarding those illegal works, what were they? It appears to me at 6.7 that they were an unfenced pool, a spa. that might have outstanding safety issues. So is it possible to potentially elaborate on that if it's relevant?
Ms. Tullamore.
Through you, Mayor, it was decking and, yes, a unfenced pool, which is a spa, as required under the regulations, obviously for safety reasons, and that building order was certified under the Building Act, and a planning enforcement order wasn't sent because it's hopefully resolved under the building order.
Thank you. So I hope I've made my reasoning clear. Illegal works that have occurred do not have the required permit issued. It also says that at 6.9. But ultimately, this really is about the fact that you can't subdivide on this particular property. So with that, I'll be supporting the Council's recommendations. Thank you.
Thank you, Councillor Cordova. Any further speakers? Councillor Midgley.
Thank you, Mayor. I have a question on page 6, where it outlines the proposal in regards to what the applicant... it describes the different applications the applicant put forward, and then noting that the applicant presented a third, details of the strata plan, and has decided to put that forward for decision making. Did we discuss with the applicant any other options that would fit within meeting their requirements?
Ms. Tullamore.
Through you, Mayor, yes, there were discussions and meetings with the applicant and the representative from PDA Surveying as well about the different iterations, and it was indicated early on that it was unlikely to be supported. It wasn't a matter of tweaking, of moving a line here or there. It just quite simply is that it presents as a subdivision for all intents and purposes, and that was raised with the applicants. I'm guessing they've chosen to go with this version, with knowing that we were going to put up a recommendation for refusal, so that this is the version that they would then proceed to an appeal with.
Thank you. Any further speakers? Councillor Fox, did you want to sum up? Thank you. I'll put the motion as printed on page 12. It was moved by Councillor Fox and seconded by Councillor Cordova. All those in favour? Against? I'll have a show of hands. All those in favour? Is Councillors Cordova, Wass, Midgley, Gladewright, Fox, Street, Bastone and Reet. Those against? Councillor Westwood. The motion is carried. Turn now to page 13, Kingston Main Street design options, with a recommendation on page 18. Do I have a mover or a seconder, please?
Could I move to defer? Do I say that now?
Do I have a seconder for deferral?
Yes.
So there's a motion for deferral from Councillor Midgley, seconded by Councillor Fox. I will put the motion for deferral. All those in favour? I think we'll have a show of hands. Is Councillors Cordova, Wass, Midgley, Gladewright, Fox and Bastone. Those against? Councillors Street, Westwood and Reet. The motion is deferred. Okay. Turning now to page 39, beach matting at Kingston Beach, with a recommendation on page 45. I might hand the chair to the Deputy Mayor for this, because this is an issue that I have been involved with and would probably be best placed to speak to.
Thank you, Mayor. We have before us on page 39 an agenda item relating to beach matting at Kingston Beach. Do I have a mover and a seconder? So moved by Councillor Reet, seconded by Councillor Midgley. Councillor Reet.
Thank you. This came out of a motion that was passed at the Access Committee of Council, and we've been doing a lot of research in relation to this over the last 6 months or so, because whilst the concept of having beach matting on Kingston Beach to enable a broad range of beach users to get access down to the water sounds like quite a simple one, as we've discovered in those in that ensuing time frame, that it is quite complicated. And I think this report does set out quite well some of the issues. And some of those really are around not just the... It's not so much the additional costs of the matting, but it's whether the feasibility of how it is rolled out, what period it's down for, and who actually does that. There are no other beaches in Tasmania where there is beach matting at the moment. There are some proposals, I believe, at Clifton Beach, but the difference there is that the local Surf Life Saving Club is likely to be involved in rolling it in and rolling it out. At an access committee meeting, we did have members of the Kingston Beach Surf Life Saving Club come along to discuss the matter, and they have indicated that their club does not have the capacity at the moment, unfortunately, and is unlikely to in the future to take on the responsibility for winding the mats in and out. So therefore this comes with a cost, whether we do it ourselves through our works crew or whether we hire a private contractor to do it. Julie Alderfox from our community development team has spent a lot of time engaging with councils in Victoria and WA who have beach matting. And through her discussions with them, we've discovered that the key to this will be firstly where it's located, because it's very heavy. It's not as simple as a one-person job to roll it in and out. And the matting is also then staked into the ground. So, of course, where there's anywhere where there are metal stakes involved, there needs to be ongoing maintenance, ensuring that it's fit for purpose for all beach users at all times. There was an incident in New Zealand where they had beach matting and somebody injured themselves because one of the metal stakes had come up. As you can see from the report, that we did get some advice of some experts in relation to what would happen when we had storm events and so on, and there was that erosion issue at the beach that did have a significant impact only about 6 or 8 weeks ago, where there was a sharp drop-off. So all of those things actually create a difficulty with how we would do this, but we want to continue forward and put this through the budget discussions. But also I think at the same time we do need to go out to broader public consultation. The motion from the Access Committee was unanimous. They are very passionate about being able to have equitable access down to the water for all beach users. But we also recognise that there are people feel a lot of ownership of our beaches in terms of the activities that take place there. And so we want to make sure that the broader community have an opportunity to have some say in this as well. So I think that the best way forward is for us to have the discussions during our upcoming budget workshops and then have a bit more of a discussion with the community about how we can take this forward.
Thank you, Councillor Reid. Councillor Midgley? You had your light on before.
Thank you. I did have my light on. I thought, oh, my light's on. Thank you, Mayor, and thank you so much for articulating the importance of this and the process in regards to how this will happen. And many of us have been lobbied in regards to how great this would be for Kingborough, and occasionally on the face social media you get a tag saying, wouldn't this be great for Kingborough? And travelling interstate, I have seen it in practice. And it does mean that we can create an accessible and inclusive Kingborough. So I look forward to the discussion regarding the engagement with community and the feedback, and hopefully we can support it in our budget process.
Councillor Cordova.
Thank you. I am wholeheartedly in support of this. I think it's a terrific initiative, and it's welcome, and just like with so many of these universal access issues, it's overdue, and I look forward to Kingborough leading the way, actually, and showing the rest of Tasmania how it's done, and in due course the other councils following our lead. My question is about that at 5.9 on page 42, this estimate assumes that the matting is only accessible for the 3 summer months. Am I correct in thinking that the reason for having the model at 3 summer months, making it accessible during those 3 summer months, is in relation to the difficulty with weather and having to have somebody at very short notice take it in and out? Is that correct? And are there, I guess, further to that question then, is it actually possible if we resource this adequately with the appropriate staff resources, is it possible to make this a 12-month access option?
Dr. Stevenson, if you could answer that question.
Through you, Deputy Mayor. The reason that for the purpose of this paper we assumed 3 months was that when we did the maths we just felt that 12 months, the recurrent costs were quite prohibitive. So already for a 3 month period, you're looking at a recurrent cost, an annual recurrent cost of over $30,000 a year. So if you extrapolate that out, we just felt that was probably an unreasonable ongoing cost given what we know about our budget. So for the purpose of the paper, we assume that the most use would be in the summer and the least risk in terms of weather events.
Thank you. And just to conclude my remarks, I think it's important to note what the geomorphological, or Mr. Sharples, who, that's an easy way of saying it, isn't it? That basically the key geomorphic issue affecting the use of disability access matting is in fact storm events and other unusual events. And there's actually a photo here in the report for those at home who may not be able to see it, where regularly, when there are storm events, there's this huge drop-off in the sand level. So in the photo, it's 400 to 500 mil drop-off as a result of erosion. And so I'll just read out that on many Tasmanian beaches, they have frequently recorded erosion resulting in vertical lowering of sandy beach surfaces by a metre or more during wave erosion events. Such an erosion event, were it to occur while a matting pathway were deployed on Kingston Beach, would completely expose and excavate the fixing staples, allowing the matting to be dragged around on the beach by waves and possibly even dragged out to sea. And so when the field, when they went out into the field to look at this, it just so happened that an event such as that had occurred 2 weeks prior, and in that case, it was half a metre of drop-off that took place. So I can fully see why it's so important that when this takes place, which I'm sure it will, and I look forward to installing that matting, that we do have that oversight to make sure that at quite short notice staff can actually pull that mat in to stop it from firstly getting damaged but also damaging other people along the beach. So once again, I just think it's a terrific initiative, and I'm really looking forward to getting this moving and also to see the community feedback that takes place. Thank you.
Thank you, Councillor Cordova. Councillor Fox.
Thank you, Deputy Mayor. As a former chair of the Access Committee for many years, the pressure used to be on Council to provide ramps to the beach, and we've got a number of good concrete ramps going onto the beach in Kingston. I think there's between 3 and 4, although one's more for dog walkers, and again in Blacktons Bay at both ends of the beach. And I noticed in Blacktons Bay they're at the extreme ends of the beach, and the more protected area is the southern end. And I think in Kingston Beach there is actually a ramp that comes from the sailing club gently down. It probably complies with the standard for ramps for people with disabilities, which terminates at the beginning of, or the end of, that little creek that comes out of Ewing Avenue. And that is generally hard sand. So to me, that would be the best location in terms of the geomorphology of Kingston Beach, to try and focus on that end of the beach where there's less likely to be rapid erosion, and it's much easier even now without the mats to walk down onto that part of the beach, except of course when there's a very high tide or there's a flood event where the creek comes out there, and also when there are big waves and a big swell. But even then, that area is protected by the boat ramp that is protected by that big breakwater. So that, to me, that is probably, it's probably not the most desirable location for people with disabilities because it's not soft sand, but still it gives them access to the soft sand from the side. But I am concerned about the cost and the practicalities of this, but I do support the recommendation because I think it's worthy of consideration and further investigation and particularly community consultation, although I am concerned that by consulting we're going to raise people's expectations, and then if we don't support it in the budget, we've got a hiding. So but I will support the motion, and I hope we can resolve the issue to everyone's satisfaction. Thank you.
Thank you, Councillor Fox. Are there any other councillors who would like to make a contribution? I have a couple of questions. We've recently worked with the Kingston Beach Surf Life Saving Club to install a section of concrete to put in a storage box for two disability access wheelchairs. Is the beach matting required for those wheelchairs to get down from the sand to the water, or is this an additional requirement for standard wheelchairs?
Deputy Mayor, the beach wheelchairs can get down to the water, but this would provide access for those people who can't easily transfer into one of those chairs, or for other types of mobility devices other than wheelchairs. So it may be people with prams, so it could be other things. But mainly the issue with those beach wheelchairs is not everyone's disability allows them to be easily transferred into those chairs.
Thank you. And so the storage space, $7,000, does that mean that council would be required to put another storage locker next to the disability wheelchair locker to store the matting?
That was one of the options that were put forward. The alternative is to store it in the off months at the depot, but either way it would need some sort of specialised storage facility.
Thank you. And with the costings at 5.9, we've got year one, $51,970, year two, $33,470. Is the year two estimate the ongoing operational costs involved in?
Yes, so the difference between year one and year two is year one is the installation and purchase costs plus the oversight and maintenance for the year, and then year two and onwards, so effectively every year onwards, then that's the rollout, oversight, maintenance costs. So they're the recurrent costs.
And so that would be what we would consider including in our budget, potentially,
yes,
if this motion is passed. Thank you. So I hate to be a big bad meanie, but given our budget workshop is in 2 days, I don't see that my view will change between today and Wednesday, so I won't be voting for this motion. If there are no further contributions, Councillor Reet, would you like to sum up?
Thank you. And I thank members for their comments. Look, this is... It sounds like a really simple concept and one that should be easily achieved, and unfortunately it's not, and it does come at a significant cost. And I think just in relation to Councillor Fox's point about where we might locate this, I think that the feeling of the Access Committee was very much that the matting be rolled out at the end of the new disability access ramp to the beach, which is opposite the public toilets, because we have the beach wheelchairs are stored there, but also then there are the toilet facilities, accessible parking spaces, level crossing and so on. So I think whilst that is a good suggestion to have it at the south, and I'll certainly pass that on if this goes through the budget process, I think it was trying to take advantage of the other infrastructure that is already in place in the centre of the beach, but also, and you'll notice in the report that it was talking about not just having a map that just goes out straight from the ramp to the water, but that there be branches off that. And what that allows then is people in wheelchairs to, or with other mobility devices, to actually move off to the side, not block access to other people, and have a picnic or with their families or enjoy the time on the beach. So increasingly we are aware that since we put in the access ramp that there are disability providers who will bring residents from all around beyond the Kingborough area to come down and have a day at the beach. And I think with the beach access wheelchairs, that's likely to increase. So it's just a matter of whether we can actually, whether the budgetary figures will, whether we can make that work, because it is a far more significant cost than we anticipated, but also then how it works in with the other activities that are currently on the beach. For example, beach volleyball take up a lot of space, the Surf Lifesaving Club with nippers and their activities as significant beach users in that location as well. Obviously, they don't want their activities impeded, so there are a lot of considerations, but I think it's certainly something that it is worthy of looking at, because it would be terrific to be able to say to the community that we've got the first beach mat, accessible beach mat in the state. So thank you all for your contributions, and I look forward to having this discussion at the budget workshop.
Thank you, Councillor Reet. All those in favour?
Aye.
Those against? We have a division. All those in favour, please raise your hand. We have Councillors Reet, Cordova, Woss, Midgley, Gladewright, Fox, Street, Bastone, and against is Councillor Westwood. Motion is passed. And I'll hand the chair back to the Mayor.
Thank you, Deputy Mayor. We're turning now to page 50. It's policy 1.15, corporate credit card. The recommendation on page 51, I'm looking for a mover and a seconder. I've got a mover in Councillor Fox and a seconder in Councillor Cordova. Councillor Fox.
It's just a minor adjustment to give employees who are currently not using credit card to have access to those credit cards, but it's very minor and I support the motion. Thank you.
Thank you. Councillor Cordova and then Councillor Westwood.
Thank you, Mayor. I think it's a good policy, and as Councillor Fox mentioned, that it's very minor changes. It's important to note that the limit is set at $32,000 across the maximum number of 20 credit cards there, and it's very clear about the authorisations and the allocations of those. So I think it's a very good policy, and it just aids and assists in making our council efficient and transparent as well. My only point that I would raise is at 5.2.3, section B, it just it refers to purchase orders. It says when purchase orders would take too long, unreasonably impact operational efficiency, or result in missed opportunities. For example, if a PO would incur significant and unreasonable additional costs, I just thought that it would be worth actually, like, at some stage, putting it in that we're talking about purchasing orders, brackets, PO, before using a minor semantic point, really, but I just thought that would clear that up, and that came across from the last one as well. Apart from that, I think it's a very good policy, and I'm pleased to be seconding it. Thank you.
Councillor Westwood.
Thank you. I just have a question in relation to the delegation to the senior finance officer of $1,000. Why is that not $2,000?
I'm going to ask Mr. Breen himself that question. I don't know, he's got an interest in this, so I don't know whether he's the right person to answer it, but we'll try. Mr. Breen.
Yeah, through you, Mayor. Essentially, we've got some officers that have a $1,000 limit and some with a $2,000 limit. We generally start at $1,000 and review them if we're finding that they're getting close to their limit in regards to usage. So at this stage, the feeling is the senior finance officer at $1,000 is more than adequate.
Thank you.
Thank you, Councillor Westwood. Councillor Midgley.
Thank you, Mayor. I just have a question in regards to 5.3, and something we've implemented at my other workplace is in regards to ensuring that staff are reading the policies. We have implemented like a little bit of a training module to go against the policies. So anyway, that was just a bit of a tip that's quite useful, so that ensuring that staff then understand the credit card policies, because there's quite a few that are named there. It wasn't a big quiz, it was just a little short question and answer that had some questions from the policy. And sorry if I've missed this, but just in regards to reconciling the credit card, if I can just have a bit of an explanation about how staff do that and if it is a simple procedure.
Mr. Breen.
Through you, Mayor. Essentially, the way the process works is that the credit card statement will be sent out to the individual and then they add their information to it, so what the transaction was, where it should be allocated to. It then goes back to the finance department and it's reviewed within that department. And if it's all seen to be appropriate, then the finance manager will review and sign off the transactions will be posted. So it's a pretty simple process. We have looked at some automation, and that might be where we move to in the future. At the moment, it's quite manual, but where I understand the bank, the Commonwealth Bank, who we deal with, have an automated process, so we're reviewing that at the moment.
Thank you, Mr. Breen. Any further discussion? If not, I will put the motion as moved by Councillor Fox, seconded by Councillor Cordova. All those in favour? Against? Motion is carried unanimously. We turn now to page 84, policy 3.18, related party disclosure policy, with a recommendation on page 85. I've got a mover in Councillor Street and a seconder in Councillor Midgley. Thank you. Councillor Street.
Thank you, Mayor. There's been no change to the policy apart from the updating of titles for key management personnel. The policy is in line with the Australian Accounting Standard on Related Party Disclosures. It's a requirement that we comply with those Australian Accounting Standards under the Local Government Act, and obviously it's good practice for us to do that anyway, because it makes sure that that we have a handle on potential conflicts of interest for key management personnel. So on the basis that there's no significant change and it otherwise complies with requirements, I commend the motion to Council.
Thank you, Councillor Street. Any further discussions? If not, I'll put the motion moved by Councillor Street and seconded by Councillor Midgley. All those in favour? Against? Motion is carried unanimously. I turn now to page 109, nomination to the Kingborough Disability Inclusion and Access Advisory Committee, with a recommendation on page 110. Do I have a mover and a seconder, please? Moved, Councillor Fox. Seconded, Councillor Watts. Councillor Fox.
Well, it's good to see somebody from VapCare putting their hand up, and we obviously have room on the Access Committee for another person representing a group, so I think it's a logical decision that we accept their nomination. Thank you.
Thank you, Councillor Fox. Any further discussion? If not, I'll put the motion, and that is that VapCare representative Mr. Bob Schneerer be appointed to the Disability Inclusion and Access Advisory Committee. Moved by Councillor Fox, seconded by Councillor Watts. All those in favour? Against? Motion is carried unanimously.
Can I either ask for a 5-minute recess or ask a procedural question in relation to something earlier in the meeting? How do I do that?
I don't know. How does she do that? Oh, just take some
recess?
Advice from the General Manager.
You can ask the question, and if we can't answer it, we can have an adjournment.
Is it appropriate to ask that question now?
Well, I don't know what it is, so you don't have to.
It relates to the deferral of the Kingston Main Street design options. In terms of, we didn't actually move the motion to discuss it. We deferred without any discussion, and there has been a lot of chatter about this in media and via email, and I acknowledge that the outcome might still be the same, but I think in terms of transparency of decision making, we should probably have some discussion about why it's being deferred.
The difficulty with that is when a procedural motion is put, we can't have the discussion, and the procedural motion was put before there was any discussion on the motion, so I have to follow the meeting procedures regulations, which makes it difficult because now nobody is clear why we've deferred it or what the intention of the deferral is. So I agree that that is somewhat difficult. Yeah. General Manager.
Through you, Mayor, if I may, particularly for those members of the community that are watching the live stream, I was contacted by Councillor Midgley this morning. Councillor Midgley moved the procedural motion to defer. I know that her intention was for a workshop to be held at the earliest possible opportunity. I'll have that discussion with the Mayor after the meeting. And I'm sure that as soon as we have a slot available, that is what will take place to enable a further report back to an early council meeting.
Thank you. We're moving to page 112 now, Kingborough Community Safety Committee, minutes of their meeting on the 21st of February 2022 with a recommendation on page 113, and I'm looking for a mover and a seconder, please. Moved Councillor Bastone, we all looked at you, and seconded by Councillor Westwood. Councillor Bastone.
I think the report is self-evident. It was a difficult meeting in so much as we were on Zoom, and it was my first meeting, so I didn't know the people, but I think we were quite successful, and I think we have a good report here.
Thank you, Councillor Bastone. Councillor Gladright.
Thank you, Mayor. I just had a question on page 117 in the minutes. It says at item 6 that it suggested the new committee members meet out of session to discuss the role and focus of the committee. I was just wondering what that was about, please.
It's because nobody knew me. They wanted to have a coffee and chat. That's what it was about. Not about anything to do with the procedures or what we were doing, just the fact that no one had met me before.
Mm-mm. Thank you.
Thank you. Councillor Cordova.
Thank you, Mayor. And I hope the coffee went well. My question is about just the... So it's referenced here about this issue with the Huon Highway intersection, and I just wanted to clarify, is that the letter which was actually sent beyond the terms of reference of the Safety Committee? It was actually sent to DSG without the approval of the Council. Is that the same letter?
Yes.
Yes. Yes. So in which case, I think... So in which case,
that
I think...
Letter.
So to clarify, I think all of the advisory committees that Council has, actually, before they make decisions like advocating to state government or indeed to anyone, they actually have to bring their decisions back to the Council. And we did clarify that at the last meeting, and I'm glad we did. I was kind of hopeful that there would be some mention made of that in the report, just to make sure that those on the committee, and now that we've got a new chair of the committee, are familiar with that, so that it kind of doesn't happen again. Importantly, I just would like to state that I'm really pleased with the fact that the Safety Committee is doing really good work, but I also just want to make sure that I think it's really comforting to me that the recommendation from council officers here is not to prosecute that idea about the Huon Highway speed reduction again. Because, as I mentioned last time, this was dealt with by two separate feedback surveys. 64% of submissions opposed any speed limit reduction. They've also now renovated that section of the highway to make it much more safe. And also, there was a separate, taking into consideration the feedback from the community, the relevant Australian standards, and recognising the department is committed to upgrade the interchange, which has now taken place, the reduction of the speed limit at Sandfly Junction is not proposed. So I just wanted to reiterate the fact that the Safety Committee in this instance is... they're kind of trying to, in my opinion, prosecute an issue that the community has already spoken on this, DSG has already spoken on this, and I certainly, as a councillor, think that it's not the right way of going about it. So I'm really pleased that hopefully, because there are indeed many legitimate safety issues to be concentrating on in Kingborough, I hope that we'll put aside this one of trying to renovate an already renovated highway that's had tens of millions of dollars spent on it to make it safe, and focus on other issues. But thank you to the Safety Committee for the work that they do.
Thank you, Councillor Cordova. I've never heard anyone refer to renovating a highway before. That was a new one for me, and I think most of us in the room. Councillor Westwood.
Thank you, Mayor. As the outgoing chair of the Safety Committee and the one who wrote the letter to the Department of State Growth, the letter was written... not from the Kingborough Council, it was written from the Kingborough Community Safety Committee. I think the point needs to be made that sometimes when we do surveys, the results can be skewed because people who have a genuine interest in a certain outcome tend to dominate the feedback provided. So apologies for sending the letter. I think that might need to be clarified a little bit further because, for example, in the past, as Chair, I have written to the Department of State Growth Bearing in mind that that's kind of an officer-to-officer level correspondence, not advocacy to an elected member of parliament, about, for example, things like additional 80 kilometre per hour fines, and I'm not sure we would want to bring every single issue like that to the full council for a decision. So my recommendation would be we clarify what the chair of council's committees can and cannot do. But I do agree with the decision not to again ask State Growth to lower the speed limit.
Thank you, Councillor Westwood. Councillor Bastone, did you want to sum up?
No, thank you.
Thank you. Definitively. I'll put the motion then. It was moved by Councillor Bastone, seconded by Councillor Westwood, with the recommendation that is printed on the screen and also on page 113. All those in favour? Against? Motion is carried unanimously. Turning to page 120, the financial report for February 2022, with the recommendation on page 121. Do I have a mover and a seconder, please? Move, Councillor Westwood. Seconded, Councillor Midgley. Councillor Westwood.
Thank you, Mayor. This is the financial report for February 2022. We receive one of these reports every month. And I guess a couple of things to note is that our underlying surplus for February 2022 is $9.5 million, which is 0.16 million favourable variance on the budget. The forecast underlying result is just under a $600,000 deficit. We do have our budget workshop on Wednesday to, consider council's financial position and to try and formulate a budget for next financial year. We do our budgets for a 12-month period, so I anticipate we will have some more discussions about council's financial position then. I guess it's just, again, you know, we have very carefully managed our budget over the last couple of years, and I think that that is recognised by external parties. But just to, I guess, bear in mind that things do change quite quickly and that we're still in uncertain times in regard to increasing in the cost of supplies to deliver our CAPEX program, and that we're just trying to manage life as normal living with COVID. But I thank Mr. Breen for the report, and I support the recommendation.
Thank you, Councillor Westwood. Next I've got Councillor Gladewright and then Cordova.
Thank you, Mayor. I think I picked up a mistake. On page 132, the title of the page is Kingborough Council July 2021.
That would be a bit of a mistake then, wouldn't
so
it?
So just to clarify then if that page is correct or if the whole page is... if it's just the title or the whole page.
Is the whole page doomed is the question, Mr. Breen.
Yeah, through to me. Yeah, no, just the heading is incorrect. The rest of the information on that page is correct.
Thank you.
Let it be reflected that Councillor Gladewright reads her papers. See, we always we hide a typo or a grammatical error in every report. It's a good trick. Councillor Cordova and then Councillor Street.
Thank you, Mayor. My question is about, at the top of page 121, the negative variance in transport activity costs. So this is as a result of roadworks on unsealed roads required to repair storm damage has resulted in a $269,000 negative variance in transport activity costs. But this negative variance in transport costs is expected to be substantially recouped over the remainder of the year. I just wanted a bit more information about how we plan to recoup the cost, and also to what degree of confidence do we have that that cost will be recouped.
Sure.
Thank you.
Mr. Reeve? No, Mr. Breen?
Yeah, through you, Mayor. Certainly an unusual set of circumstances where in the first part of the year we spent significant dollars on repairing our unsealed roads and related infrastructure. I had some conversations with the works manager, and he's indicated that he's certainly taking all steps he can to reduce the cost. And in actual fact, in February, our transport costs were $100,000 under budget for the month. So certainly heading in the right direction. The other thing that's a bit favourable for us at the moment as well is in February, March and April, we'll spend a lot of time in the capital workspace on resealing and renewing roads. So that certainly takes costs out of the works area, because they're spending time in the capital space. So look, reasonably confident that he'll get close to break even, but maybe slightly over budget.
Thank you. And just to follow up to that, does that therefore mean that we shouldn't expect that roads aren't being resurfaced, roads aren't getting like bumped down the list because of that extra expenditure before, that, you know, nothing's getting slowed down as a result of this? We're still doing as much as we were planning to do before. Is that correct?
Mr. Breen.
Through me, yes, look, essentially this is a planned process that they go through, and really it's generally over the summer months where they find whether we spend more time in the capital space than we do in the operational space, and then over the winter months it tends to turn around the other way. So it's certainly a planned process.
Thank you.
Thank you, Councillor Cordova. Councillor Street.
Thank you, Mayor. Look, only one question / comment, and it's just around employee costs. I think our HR staff are to be congratulated for ensuring that employees are taking substantial annual leave over the summer months. I mean, it's great from a financial perspective, but it's also great from an employee wellbeing perspective. I'm just wondering whether we could get some advice about whether that brings us back to a level that we should be content with, or whether there's still some work to do in that area.
Mr. Breen.
Yeah, through you, Mayor. Yeah, look, certainly there's been significant holiday activity over the January and into February months. In actual fact, our provision at the end of February is actually minus $6,000, the provision movement, so we've had more leave taken than we've had accrued. Unfortunately, as we go into the colder months, that is likely to turn around somewhat, but hopefully now that people are a little bit more confident about travelling to the mainland and perhaps even potentially travelling overseas a bit later in the year, hopefully that will come in about where we expect it to be, so there won't be any significant increase in holiday leave. And we're certainly working a lot internally to try and to get managers to try and work with their staff to make sure they're taking any leave, particularly once it gets to the excess levels.
Thank you, Mr. Breen. Councillor Midgley.
Thank you, Mayor. Thank you, Mr. Breen, for the report. And it's great to have the public open space commitments on page 126. It's good to have that breakdown on that. Just flicking through, couldn't find it on the computer. I've written a few notes. I can't see what page that we're on. But while I was looking at the budget papers for Wednesday, I noted something that I couldn't see in this paper here in regards to the Love Living Locally event that has a $10,000 allocated to it. I couldn't find it here, my apologies, and noting that it is mid-March, just wondering if there is any plan for that event, and if not, what happens to that $10,000? Thank you.
Dr. Stevenson. Through you, Mayor. Because of the ongoing impact of COVID, we have determined not to run a big-scale Love Living Locally, as has been held in the past this year. We do hope to be able to do that next year. This year we're going to be doing a range of smaller events under that banner, and they will happen before the end of the financial year.
Great. Thank you. Noting that it started in 2011, about this time. It came up on my Facebook news stories. And noting that we have a breakdown regarding Kingston Park, I'm wondering if in the future we can have a breakdown in regards to the Transform Kingston expenses that is similar to that one on page... Sorry, I don't know where it is. Kingston Park's, so on page 141. Or have I missed that somewhere?
Mr. Breen.
Yes, through you, Mayor. If we don't, City Deal Funding is where the information is. So on page 136, we'll get a better breakdown next financial year when we really identify the projects that are being undertaken and the works and the budget against those particular projects.
But great.
It is in the report.
Thank you. And noting there's an expense for the $250,000 for a bus change in for a bus interchange design, and that's a matter that council has been involved in discussions with. Am I correct in that one?
Correct.
Thank you. And noting the Conyngham to Stug shared path feasibility, is there any update on how that is going?
Mr. Reeve.
Through you, Mayor. Are you referring to the Kingston to Margate, or are you referring to
The Conyngham.
The Conyngham one? So that's,
yes.
That's been substantially completed in terms of a path that could potentially go down through that area there, a little bit different to the one that goes from Margate to Snug.
Yes.
So that will be one that we'll be looking for some future consideration or even grant funding going forward in the future. So there's still a couple of little outstanding details that we need to manage in terms of some of the land tenure on the way, but substantially complete.
Great, thank you. And noting our playground upgrade, and sorry I can't find the page. Next time I'll make sure I note the page next to when I write my notes, but the Alamo Place and Drew Point Playground. If someone can find what page they are on. I'm just wondering how they are progressing, noting again that it's March and...
Okay, Mr. Smee.
Through you, Mayor, both those projects have been significantly delayed because we lost our urban design officer. We now have a new one on board, but it's going to take him some time to get up to speed. But certainly they're on his list. He's got a quite lengthy list, and they are towards the top of that list.
Thank you. Any further discussion? Councillor Westwood, did you want to sum up? Thank you. I'll put the motion then. It is as printed on page 121, moved by Councillor Westwood, seconded by Councillor Midgley. All those in favour? Against? Motion is carried unanimously. We move now to page 142, notices of motion. Councillor Gladewright has submitted a notice of motion headed roundabout lanes, and there is an officer's response from Mr. Reeve. I'm looking for a mover and a seconder. Moved Councillor Gladewright, seconded Councillor Fox. Councillor Gladewright.
Could I just ask, in the officer's suggestion, it's recommended that we widen the request that the Department of State Growth review the operation of the roundabout based on community safety and capacity reasons. Could we add that to the motion?
Yep. I was going to ask the same.
Okay, so let's just park that and start with Councillor Gladewright's contribution, and you can address during your...
I was just going to ask exactly that. Are you articulating the same thing that I'm trying to in a better way, or is it essentially the same thing?
Mr. Reeve, are you trying to make her words better? I think what Councillor Gladewright just asked. So I'm just paraphrasing what she just asked.
Through you, Mayor, I strive in my life to improve people. but in this case there, look, I think it has been identified through the previous traffic studies that we've actually done there that is actually an important capacity constraint for us as well in terms of all the traffic that goes through our CBD area. So I think the points that have been raised in the motion there are good, but I think it would be good also to actually get them to provide some more feedback on some of the options that have been listed in the original GH&D report for that area.
So then do I move to amend?
No, somebody else would do that for you, and you would accept it as the mover, and Councillor Fox would accept it as the seconder. Councillor Cordova.
Yeah, so I'm happy to move the amendment, which, and I'll read the room here, but it would be to strike all the words after KFC and replace them with review the operation of the roundabout based on community safety and capacity reasons.
Is that acceptable to you, Councillor Gladewright, as the mover, and Councillor Fox as the seconder? So that becomes the substantive motion now. Just for the people who are watching along at home,
The motion now is that Council requests the Department of State Growth to address community safety concerns associated with the Channel Highway roundabout opposite KFC.
By reviewing
the operation of the roundabout based on community
safety and capacity.
We've got Mr. Smee doing his best Mrs. Morton impersonation today, and he's doing quite well, but that was a little fast for him. And capacity. Are there further speakers? Councillor Gladewright, did you want to say anything else?
No, I think it's fairly self-explanatory.
Because that is the, so this is your opportunity to speak on the substantive motion now, if you wish. No? Okay, Councillor Fox, and then Councillor Bastone.
Yes, I think this is a good idea to bring this to the department's attention. I've always been concerned about this roundabout, and I was travelling through it only earlier this week and realised that what might be good for the people coming from Kingston and going to the south or east or whatever, north, isn't always good for the people coming from the other direction, because if there's two cars coming towards you, it's harder to judge when to enter that roundabout rather than having one car coming towards you and knowing exactly whether they're going to turn left or come straight ahead. So it doubles the complexity for elderly people to have to deal with that situation, but also timid drivers, P-platers, for example. But at the same time, that is a major blockage, that roundabout, and it does build up substantially when the school comes out from the high school, and also when the sports centre is very busy, and also when people want to get to KFC in a hurry. So I do think it is worth considering. I'm not 100% sure that having a double lane is going to solve the issue. I think widening and making a double lane might actually make it harder for a lot of people. So I really would like to see the experts look at this and give us a really professional recommendation, rather than trying to do this as lay people, really, even though we're elected councillors. We can see it from one point of view, but maybe not from the bigger picture point of view. So I do think it's a good motion. Thank you.
Thank you, Councillor Fox. Next, I've got Councillor Bastone.
Thank you. I have two questions. The first one is, if I went and had a look at this, and there's quite an obvious pinch point on a house at the area where a house is up for sale at the moment, if land had to be acquired from that person to make this lane work, would the council be responsible for paying the price of the land that had to be purchased, or would it be State Growth? That's my first question.
Mr. Reeve. Try again.
Through you, Mayor. Look, it's a State Growth roundabout, so generally if they would be undertaking any work on it, then they would be undertaking all the aspects associated with it, which would include, if they need to do any acquisitions, those as well.
Thank you. And my other question is, could it not be made, not wishing to go into what Councillor Fox was saying and us being lay people, but as someone that uses that roundabout a lot, that it actually has a slip lane rather than two lanes going into the roundabout, it has a slip lane going south, which would stop the people worrying about two cars coming through at the same time. So actually changing the roundabout to be one lane going to the west and one lane, a slip lane going south.
Mr. Reeve.
Through you, Mayor. I guess you're getting into some of the design details now, so without having a fairly good look on site there, I wouldn't know whether or not you'd have the room there to actually put that in place. Certainly the bits of GH&D had a look at was the actual roundabout proper itself there, in terms of actually increasing some lanes on a couple of the legs, just to try and get the traffic through faster as compared to the safety issue, which Councillor Gladewright has actually mentioned in the motion there. So I think the simple answer to it is you'd need to do some more investigation on what would be possible. But that is the reason to actually send something that's fairly complete to State Growth, so that they focus on the entire roundabout and the operation of the entire roundabout.
Okay. Councillor Westwood and then Councillor Midgley.
Thank you. It's quite a handy little zippy thing to do.
It's up there with the swishy grass that we were talking about a few weeks ago, isn't it?
Given it is not two lanes but is used as two lanes because it is handy, and we're now acknowledging that it's used like that when it shouldn't be, is there any impetus now on council to stop people doing that?
Mr. Reeve, I suspect the answer is no, because we don't police that. That would be Tasmania Police. But
through me, I guess there's two things to say there. There's no impetus for council to actually, as the Mayor rightly pointed out, to police that. The other thing is that if we were or someone else was to actually constrict that two lanes there, we will get more traffic congestion issues in the CBD area. That was clearly outlined in the traffic report that GHMD did.
Yes, I agree. It's definitely better off being two lanes. Is there any way we could put a line in the middle of the road to more formally make it two informal lanes?
Through you, Mayor. I don't believe there's actually the standard width there that allow you to actually put two lanes in there. Doesn't mean that two cars or two vehicles can't actually go side by side there, but purely from a standard perspective there, not quite the width to actually do that.
Thank you. So writing to the Department of State Growth, if we support this motion, has no negative impact on the current use of the informal double lane?
Mr. Reeve.
Yeah, through you, Mayor. Look, I don't believe so. I mean, like, State Growth will actually look at all the attributes that actually make up the operation of that area there, including how it actually operates at the moment there. So they're unlikely, and they'll discuss this with council officers as well, and they'd be very unlikely to actually change a current situation there unless there was something that was actually supporting that in terms of crash history and so forth. But they would be also unlikely to do it if they realised it was going to have a detrimental effect on other parts of the network.
Thank you.
Councillor Midgley.
Thank you, Mayor. In reference to the Central Kingston traffic plan, which I'd have to dig out somewhere in my emails, or perhaps I don't know if it was actually given to councillors, is that something that could be made available public, or is it on the website? I've just had a bit of a look, but there's 262 searches when I type that in, so is it of relevance for us to sort of, as councillors, to be aware of that and revisit that, and especially as we have a new councillor who wasn't involved in discussions around that. Is that something we can have access to again?
Mr. Reeve.
Yeah, through Mayor. There's no reason why we can't send a copy to councillors.
Great.
Yep.
Thank you. And can it be on the website? Is it appropriate? Or?
Yeah, there's no particular reason why it couldn't go on the website.
Thank you.
Further contributions, just before I ask Councillor Gladerod if she'd like to sum up. Look, I really think that we do need to get something done about this roundabout, and as I mentioned previously, you haven't lived until you've taught somebody to drive and taken them to that roundabout and experienced that. It's a bit like the Algona Road one. I feel like I've become a one-person vigilante because I sit right in the middle when I'm there. And I feel like I do take, you know, it's a risk because then somebody will squeeze on either side of you. And I've had it, even though I go straight ahead at that roundabout to go home all the time, somebody will squeeze and it's a matter of time before there is a really serious accident. So, you know, I don't think any of us want to see that roundabout altered in a way that would contribute to congestion, but there are some really dangerous things that I see happen there, and that happens nearly... you know, I go through that roundabout effectively once or twice a day and I see scary things happen all the time. And so I would hope that we can see some common sense. And it's not necessarily just about crash statistics because they only tell part of the story. And I think that's quite frustrating sometimes with when DSG analyses things. I know they have to base it on some sort of data, but the crashes alone don't tell that story because it's the near misses. and they're the things that you can't quantify really, but I know how many times I've had them personally at that spot. So I do hope that we can see a resolution. Councillor Glaidwright, did you want to sum up?
Am I able to ask a couple more questions?
And no, because okay. You're now summing up.
All right.
You've missed that opportunity, unfortunately. I know. I know people listening to this must think I'm really mean as the chair, but that's the meeting procedures regulations. So it was, yeah. So
all right. I'll try and sum up my.
I just asked, did Councillor Glaidwright have a light on before? Because I think she did sort of mention to me, can I ask a question? I said, yeah, put your light on and then you can ask a question.
It's okay. I was just a bit alarmed by the concept of the acquisition of somebody's land, and that's definitely not something that I was aiming to do with this motion. And so my question was going to be around that slice of land that would be needed is, I believe, council land and not somebody's private property. But anyway, so in summing up, let's hope that that situation doesn't occur, and I put the motion. Thanks.
Thank you. There are always creative ways to get around meeting procedure regulations. Well done. I'll put the motion as printed. It's moved by Councillor Glaidwright and seconded by Councillor Fox. All those in favour? Against? Motion is carried unanimously. We turn now to page 142, confirmation of items to be dealt with in closed session. We've got confirmation of minutes, applications for leave of absence and a tender assessment for Browns Road Reconstruction Stage 1. I'm looking for a mover and a seconder. Moved Councillor Westwood, seconded Councillor Glaidwright. All those in favour? Against? Motion is carried unanimously. In accordance with the Kingborough Council Meetings Audio Recording Guidelines Policy, recording of the open session of the meeting will now cease. Thank you to everyone who has been watching.